called Surrender to Krishna, which is 56 to 66. And that section has three subsections, which are actually this Brahma Nishta, Ishwar Nishta, and Bhagavat Nishta. But it's not so easy to determine this. And I myself have just understood this by the mercy of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because otherwise you have, if you look in the Surrender Unto Me, you'll see that there's this section about Jnana Yoga, 49 to 55, and then 56 to 60 is called Pure Devotional Service, which begins this verse, Karman, Sarva Karman Yapi Sada, this verse, which we discussed already, and up to 60, which is Chaitasa Sarva Karmani. But actually this section is describing coming to Krishna through Brahmanishna, which is 56 to 60. It could be considered pure devotional service, but anyway, that's the specific thing that's going on there. Because there you'll see not only Srila Prabhupada, but Vishwanath Chakravarti, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, they're describing how the devotee should offer the results of his karma to the Lord and try to think of the Lord while he's doing his work. Right? And then from 61 to 63, that's that Ishwar Nishta, a person who's surrendering to Krishna by thinking of him within his heart as the Antaryami and doing his occupational duties, offering the work itself to him. So it's like something more. So now this section here is the most confidential. So the Brahmanishta is called Guhya Gyan, then the Ishwaranishta is called Guryatar Gyan, or yeah, you can say that also. And this is Guhyatama Gyan, knowledge, most confidential. Yeah, now what we're going to do now. Yeah. And this is considered the most confidential. And as we described in 64, I said that Arjuna was silent, deliberating on the instructions. And then Krishna felt very compassionate toward his dear friend and then said that, now I will summarize everything for you, make it very simple. I'll just read the commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, which actually is in this verse 64. And yeah, we can read this verse, and then I'll read this commentary. I gave that idea in yesterday's class in 63. Sarva guyattamam bhuya shrinu me paramam vachaha ishtosi me dridham iti tato bhakshami te hitam. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. Actually, the word bhuya, which means again, it's not in the translation, but it could be. And because you are my dear friend, I am again speaking to you my supreme instruction. Why Bhuya? Because he already spoke this before in chapter 9:934. And that is the most confidential instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. And so that's what he's referring to here now, that I'm going to speak this Raja Guhya again, this Raja Vidya. And Prabhupada says also, that the Lord had given Arjuna knowledge that is confidential, knowledge of Brahman, still more confidential, knowledge of the Super Soul within everyone's heart, and now he's giving the most confidential part of knowledge, just surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the end of chapter 9, he has said, man mana, just always think of me. This same instruction is repeated here to stress the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. This essence is not understood by a common man, but by one who is actually very dear to Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna. This is the most important instruction in all Vedic literature. What Krishna is saying in this connection is the most essential part of knowledge, and it should be carried out not only by Arjuna, but all living entities. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has written, when Krishna saw that his dear friend had fallen silent while thinking about the deep and grave meanings of this Gita Shastra, his heart melted like butter, and he said, O Arjuna, my dear friend, now I will speak the essence of all Shastra to you in these concluding 8 shlokas. If Arjuna asks, why will you take the trouble? Then to answer this, Krishna speaks verse 64. I am again giving you the essence of chapter 9 with the words manmana bhavamad bhakto. This is certainly the supreme statement, for it is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the conclusion of all Shastras. Guhyatamam means that there is nothing more confidential to be found anywhere. It is absolute. I am speaking this again for your greatest benefit because you are my very dear friend. Why not? After all, a person doesn't tell the most confidential secrets to anyone but his dearest friend. So it's a little bit clearer translation of this section. So, Bhuya, why again? Because Arjuna is his most dear friend, so he speaks out of kindness, friendship, and love to Arjuna. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam vaishyasi satyam te prati jane priyosime. Always thinking of me, become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So the same first half of the verse is being spoken, the same 4 items which we discussed before. Manmana bhava means one should think of Krishna. This is the highest instruction. And mad bhakta bhava, they become my devotee. So if one cannot think of Krishna constantly, then he should serve Krishna. The gopis, they're always thinking of Krishna constantly. When the gopis were very young, maybe 5 years old, they just would sometimes catch sight of Krishna in the village, going in and out, tending cows, and they just fell in love with him completely. That's called purva-rag. It's a kind of love and separation before actually meeting the beloved. And it's mentioned that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that of the different kinds of feelings of separation, this is the only kind of mood of separation which can be cultivated by a sadhaka. Because the other moods of separation are after one meets Krishna, like man, prema vaichitya, and pravas. So the gopis, they were feeling some pangs, you know, in the heart. They had fallen in love with Krishna. And they didn't tell each other, because that's the meaning of the word gopi. Comes from the dhatu gup, which means to hide. Right? So the lady who, or girl who hides her love, she's called gopi, as well as the one who protects the cows, tends the cows. So they would go to the Jamuna and they would go there and, you know, fill their buckets up, their jugs. with Jamuna water. And although they didn't really know in each other's hearts what was present, but as it is said, birds of a feather flock together. So they ended up all flocking together on the bank of the Jamuna. And you know, they would talk, but they wouldn't talk about what was deep in their heart. But the other ones, because they had the same thing, they could sense that the other one had the same feeling. So that gradually they brought up the topic with each other. And then they would, gradually they revealed their hearts to one another. And they began weeping, thinking of Krishna. That they want to be with Krishna, they want to please Krishna and serve him. They want Krishna to be their husband. Nanda Gopasutam Devi. Pati me kurute namaha. They were praying like this, just about this time in the year. And at that moment, Mrinda Devi appeared in the guise of a yogini, kind of female ascetic. And she came and she said, I live in the forest and I couldn't but help see the pangs of love. You're suffering so much from your love that I felt out of great compassion I came to try to help you. And if you listen very carefully to my instructions, then I will tell you how you can perform some worship and meditation and mantra chanting which will bring about your desired result. What that which you're hankering for. So then Brinda Devi, whispered the mantra into the ears of these gopis and told them the kind of austerities and worship that they should perform. Worshipping Katyayani during this winter part of the year, the Hemant season. And then she disappeared. And the gopis were very excited and they immediately decided they were going to implement these instructions and they went home. And their mothers were very concerned once they heard, because they were worried that, are you going to perform all these austerities with your tender young girls, your fragile bodies? How will your fragile bodies support and tolerate such severe austerities, and you've never done this before? Where will you get the determination to do these things? And although the mothers there were very happy because they wanted their daughters to get married, so they encouraged them, yes, you should do this. And so they asked them, you know, what kind of puja will you do? Will you worship Uma or Umapati or maybe Lord Brahma? And will you need any wealth to do this puja? And who will be the who will you get as your acharya to chant the Vedic hymns? In this way, the gopis, they didn't want to reveal the secrets in their heart, so they just said, "We're going to worship Katyayani by the banks of the Jamuna," and that's all. They didn't tell anything else, but actually, they knew exactly what they wanted Krishna as their husband, and they were going to eat havisyan, you know, the boiled rice and dal without any masala or any spices for 1 month. And they would rise early before dawn and take bath in the cold Jamuna waters and then fashion a deity from the sand on the beautiful, pristine banks of the Jamuna. They would make this beautiful deity, and then they brought so many fancy articles to clothing, cooked food, and of course incense, ghee lamp, flowers, tambur, and so many different things. They brought coconuts, milk, bananas, dahi, and they did all this elaborate puja. And actually, the puja became more elaborate every day of the month. So then, towards the end of the month, all of the gopis had a revelation because Katyayani had appeared in their minds. And either in sleep or during the day, she revealed to them that, beautiful girls of Braja, you are the topmost enjoyment for Krishna's conjugal love. Surely your desires will be fulfilled. You continue with your puja and your austerities, and very soon you will have the association with Krishna. Your worship of Krishna is very glorious, and it will make me glorious as well. So you continue, and soon, in a few days, you can give up all your austerities. And she, so all those young girls, they were like 5 years old. And Krishna was 6 at that time. And because it's before the Govardhan Lila, and Krishna was 7 then, that's the year before. So then they did a few more days, and then on the last day they all had the same idea. Let's invite our dearmost friend, the daughter of Vrishabhanu, to come with us on the last morning, and we'll all have our celebration bath together. How wonderful that will be. And they all immediately agreed, because they all had the same thought. Yes, she's most dear to us. So they invited Srimati Radharani and her dear friends, Lalita, Vishaka, and some of others who are more prominent, and amongst the Braja Gopis. And then that morning they all walked to the Jamuna just before sunrise. And they would hold hands and they would sing songs about Krishna. And they were like teasing each other. Singing these songs. Oh, you, the son of Nanda, he's dressed so beautifully with lotus eyes and Pitambara. Oh, he will marry you, O Sakhi. He'll come up to your door on the wagon, surrounded by so many Vrijabasis playing musical instruments. And when you hear that sound, when it comes to your door, oh, your heart will flutter with excitement. Yes, this will be the son of Nanda. You will attain him. And you'll go to the wedding pavilion, and he'll be dressed in such a beautiful way. And then your father will put your hands together, and you'll touch his hand, and you'll shiver with ecstasy. And he'll pour the turmeric water and chant, and the Brahmins will chant the mantras. Oh, who could understand what's happening in your heart at that time? And they will sing songs like this, like, and teasing one another. So they came to the bank of the Jamuna that last morning, and then Krishna knew everything that was going on. So he came with his 4 friends, Sridham, Sudham, Vasudham, and Kinkini, who were maybe 4 or 5 years old. Vishwanath Chakravarti says they were 2 or 3 years old. But in any case, they were younger. Krishna didn't want to unnecessarily embarrass the gopis any more than he was already going to do. So he was hiding in the bushes with his friends, and he tucked his hair under his turban, and then he hiked up his dhoti, took off his ankle bells, and started creeping through the bushes like a transcendental thief, looking back and forth, casting these kind of mischievous glances. And his friends were laughing. Shh. Tell him quiet. Purna Shanti, Mane Rakhiye. Clean. And then like this. And he would come and he snatch the clothes and put on his shoulder, then go back. And of those young boys who are still laughing. Go, Paul. Shh. And they'd climb the tree, put the clothes up on the tree, and then they started laughing very loudly. And all the gopis that were in the water, then suddenly they heard these boys' voices, and then they just went down into the water up to the neck, because they didn't have any clothes on. And then they could recognize Krishna's deep, sonorous laughter. And they looked back and forth and they said, "Hey, where's our clothes? Who took our clothes?" "There's no one here but the rays of the sun." Oh, then they heard the laughter. Then they thought, oh my God, what are we going to do? And then Krishna started joking with them and, saying, young girls, do you know who might have put these clothes up here in the tree? I was herding my cows from very far away, and I saw this strange new kind of kadamba tree, and I thought, what kind of kadamba tree has for its fruits and flowers different kinds of clothing? So I came and climbed this tree just to see. Do you know who might have put these clothes up here?" And then they had a long conversation. But those gopis, they were meditating on Krishna so much that Vrindadevi came and actually helped them to attain Krishna's association. And in this way their desires were fulfilled to meet with Krishna, because he promised that your desires will all be fulfilled in the coming nights when we meet together. So it was understood, because a young girl never meets a man at night except for her husband, that now Krishna had, in essence, married all the gopis. By their intense, meditation, manmara bhava, they had actually, in one sense, captured Krishna, even though it seemed that he captured them. But they had actually captured his heart. And they also offered their heart to Krishna in the form of their clothes. And when Krishna returned their clothes to them, then he offered his heart to them. So the clothes was just a pretext or a medium for the exchange of their hearts. Although it seems for a common man somewhat like the lusty affairs of a young boy and young girls, but it has nothing to do with that at all. It has such deep significance. It's the highest, one of the highest leelas in the whole Bhagavatam, because it's like the initiation of the gopis before they enter into the Ras Leela. Because it was there that he promised that we will enjoy in the coming nights. So in the next year they had the Ras Leela, and then they fulfilled all of their desires. So in this way the gopis exhibit the highest, they're the exemplars of manmana bhava, always thinking of Krishna. And for those who don't have such an intense purva rag, then they do the next instruction, mad bhakta bhava, that become my devotee. Devotees like Prahlad, who said shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam padasevanam archanam vandanam dasyam sakyamatma nivedanam, or Maharaj Ambarish, who offered all of his senses, his eyes in seeing the deity, his legs in walking to the temple, his hands in washing the temple floor, touching the devotees, his nose in smelling the flowers and incense offered to the Lord, his ears in hearing the kirtan and the harikatha. So these devotees there exhibit the exemplars of Madhbhakta Bhava. And then Madhyanji means worship me. So if one can't serve Krishna and completely surrender to him and engage all of his senses fully in his service, then one can do some puja, archana. And if one can't do that, then at least he can offer his obeisances. Because from doing that alone, everything else will come. When I was in New York City once, and I was speaking to a life member, had been to the Rath Yatra, I think it was in, had been to the Puri Rath Yatra. And see, it was 1989. So I think it was 89 that year. And those were from some Orissan devotees. How far is Cuttack from Puri? 90
kilometers.
90 kilometers. Huh?
90.
Okay. So the young boy, maybe 7 or 8, maybe 9 or 10, not more than that, he decided he was going to do Dandavat Parikrama from Cuttack to Puri. And then and join in the Rath Yatra. His parents thought he was crazy, and they said, "No way, we're not going to let you do this. You'll never make it on time. It's so far." Because there was only, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, something before the, or 10 days, something. He's going to do 10 kilometers a day, you know, 9 kilometers a day. It's impossible. And besides, you'll hurt yourself, you're a young boy. But he was so determined. He said, "No, I'm definitely going to do this. I don't care what you say. My Lord Jagannath, he's waiting for me, and I want to do this for him. And it doesn't matter I'll just sneak out from the house and do it anyway if you don't let me." So then the parents relented. And so then the mother said, "All right, if you insist. But then we'll let you do it if you allow me to come with you and I'll cook for you every day." Then he said, "All right." So the mother came and she brought a little chuli and, you know, a bag of rice that she was cooking every day along the side of the road while her young boy was doing this dandavat parikrama. Not just, you know, parikrama, but dandavats, you know. You know, that's incredible for such a long way. And, you know, they were maybe after a week, you know, they were only like maybe halfway or maybe three quarters of the way then. And the mother was always saying, I told you, look what you've done. Now both of us, we won't go to the Rath Yatra because you'll never do it. You're late. We'll be late. We'll miss the whole." And the boy didn't care. He said, "Just be quiet. I'm going to do this, and I'll do it quickly. As I'm doing it more quickly, just don't bother me." He kept doing his dandavats, and the days went on. So it was the day of the Rath Yatra, and they were still, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 kilometers outside of the city. And so then the mother said, "Just see. Today's the Rath Yatra. Now we still have some kilometers to go, and you're still here." He said, "Doesn't matter. I made my vow, and I must fulfill my vow." And he's doing his namaskars, his dandavats there, all the way into Puri. And that year, according to the life member, this was just 14 years ago. He said that they brought Jagannath, Baladev, and Lady Subhadra out and put them on the carts, and Baladev and Subhadra began to roll, but Jagannath didn't leave. He stayed there, and they were pulling and pulling and pulling, and they couldn't pull the cart. So the first two carts stayed, and then it went all the way to the next day, and then again into the next day. And whatever they did, the cart wouldn't move. And, the people were bewildered. They just stayed there. And then on the third day, the boy came in to Puri, you know, doing his dandavats. And there was a big crowd of people. And as soon as he came up and he said, look, Mata, Jagannath, he's here. He waited for me. Just see." And his mother just couldn't believe it. She's, you know, she's, what? The cart is still here? It's, no, did we make some mistake? And all the people were still there? And they were, and as soon as the boy came up, then the cart started to roll, and everyone said, Jai Jagannath! They started smashing the drums and everything. And it, but the people who were in the area, there, they saw that as soon as this boy came up, the cart started to roll. And the boy's, his face was covered with tears rolling down his cheeks, and he was just shaking. He says, my Lord Jagannath, he waited for me. And his mother was crying too. And so this man, he said he was in that crowd and he saw them. And he said it was the most amazing experience of his life, that the young boy had made such a vow, and it actually made Lord Jagannath stop for 3 days. This is real Namaskuru. Real doing namaskars with real bhav. You know. So all of these are important angas of bhakti. So Krishna is describing that this is his sarva guhyatamam, right? Bhuya. It's in highest instruction. And he said, I'm telling you this again. And he says, Mama Vaishasi, you will come to me. To me, and not to anyone else. Not to the thousand-headed Purusha. Not to the thumb-sized Paramatma, the indwelling Antaryami. And not to the Nrisinga Varaha or any other avatars, but to me, the son of Devaki. That you will come to me, Arjuna. And I promise you, satyam te. The word satyam means truth, but it also means to make a vow. There's many meanings of the word satya. And one of them, according to Amara Kosh and other dictionaries, Sanskrit dictionaries, and Monier Williams also, satyam means, one of the meanings is a vow. And here's Krishna saying, I'm making a vow. And I promise you, pratijane. Right. That you are dear to me. Therefore, I promise you that if you do these four things, that you will definitely come to me. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, he to whom I am very dear is also very dear to me. And so, Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes, as explained before, if you develop the qualities of always thinking of me and the others, you will certainly come to me, who am your beloved friend, Krishna, the son of Devaki. I have qualities such as being dark blue, like a blue lotus flower, and I appear in a human form. You will not go to some other form of mine, like the thousand-headed Purusha, the thumb-sized Supreme Lord, Super Soul, Lord Nrisinga or Varaha. This is my vow, that in truth, I will give you possession even of myself, your friend. But then Arjuna says, but you are from Mathura. So, and people from Mathura, they're saying satyam, satyam this, satyam that. In everything they speak, they promise, but they never fulfill their vow. Because everybody knows people from Mathura lie and cheat. And this is actually true. So then the Lord says, then I say this, Arjuna, you are very dear to me. And the affectionate people of Mathura, it's true they lie and cheat, but they never deceive those whom they love. And what to speak of those who are most beloved. And you are my most dear friend. So you should have faith in my words. So Prabhupada mentions here, the most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna Always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator, no. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where he will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna, because he is the dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and obtain the same perfection as Arjuna. These words stress that one should concentrate his mind upon Krishna, the very form with two hands carrying a flute, the bluish boy with a beautiful face and peacock feathers in his hair. There are descriptions of Krishna found in the Brahma Samhita and other literature. One should fix his mind on this original form of Godhead Krishna. One should not even divert his attention to other forms of the Lord. The Lord has multi-forms as Vishnu, Narayan, Ram, Varaha, etc. But a devotee should concentrate his mind on the form that was present before Arjuna. Concentration of the mind on the form of Krishna constitutes the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is disclosed to Arjuna, because Arjuna is the most dear friend of Krishna's. In regards to Namaskuru, it is said in the Skanda Purana, Shatyepi Namaskaram, Shatyepi Namaskaram, Kurvata Shangadhanvine, Shatta Janmarajitam Papam, Takshanat Eva Nashyati. So that means that if one offers obeisances to Krishna even in a deceitful, cheating way, then 100 lifetimes of sin will be destroyed in a moment. Even if he does it shatyepi namaskaram, means in a cheating way, in a deceptive, in an insincere way. Right? Shatyepi namaskaram kurvata shangadhanvine shatta janmarajitam papam tatkshanat eva nashyati. Certainly, says, 100 lifetimes of sin in a moment. So, and that's the lesser of these angas here. The what to speak of someone who's thinking of Krishna always, or surrendering everything to Krishna, or worshipping Krishna. And it's even more potent. So then Arjuna asks, should I meditate on you and fulfill my ashram dharma as well? Or should I only perform dhyana without the other dharmas? So now Krishna answers in this next verse. Should I meditate on you while fulfilling my ashram dharma as well? Or should I only perform meditation without the other dharmas? That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written. Let's see if there's any other connections. I wrote, you have said so many things. Think of me, be my devotee, worship me. Make it simple and say one thing. Could read something else by Vishwanath Chakravarti about Manmana. Let's go back just for 5 minutes more. This is just from his Tika. You first become my devotee and think of me and meditate on me, but not with motive, but as a devotee of the Lord. Meditate on me as a devotee. Or the meaning of Manmana is, you give your mind to me, Shamasundar, beautiful blackish boy with locks of hair on his face, whose eyebrows are like curved creepers, whose face is like the nectar of the moon raining down. The meaning of Mudbhakta means, give your senses to me. perform kirtan, hear about me, take darshan of the deity, of my deity, offer chandan, umbrella, chamara, collect flowers, make garlands, engage all of your senses, rendering services to me. Madhyaji means worship me. Offer incense, flowers, ghee-lamp, and food. Become my pujari. Or, if you can do nothing else, offer your obeisances, either ashtanga or panchanga obeisances. Thus, mud bhakti is there in every activity, and it will be pleasing. Mama Vaishasi, out of these four, thinking, worshipping, bowing down, do all of them, or at least one of them, and you will attain me and come to me. Give your mind to me and your senses, such as the ear and tongue. If you give this to me, what will I give you? Tubhyam aham atmanam eva dasyama. I'll give my very self to you, not to anyone else. In this, please, do not have any doubts. So now Arjuna is wondering, should he just do this manmanav bhava, or should he also do his, you know, swadharma along with it? So now Krishna gives him that. This is the charama shloka, which means the topmost verse. Charama shloka. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo mukshayishyami ma shuchaha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Prabhupada writes, the Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, knowledge of the different orders in Varnashram, knowledge of renounced life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He has described in so many ways different types of religion. Now in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions. And the Lord personally promises to protect him. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who has become free from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus, one may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.676. This is originally from the Vayu Purana. And both Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti quote this six steps of surrender in their commentary. Prabhupada continues on the backside, going down a bit. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation, and mystic yoga, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. One can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he's all attractive. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So to understand more fully what it means to surrender and what is this Bhagavad Nishtha, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted from the Bhagavatam in different places. So we will read some of those places. First one, he quotes 11.5.41. Divarshi bhutapti nirnam pitrinam nakinkaro nayamani charajan sabatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam pariritya kartam. O King, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, sages, living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. Right? So all of the conventional dharmas are immediately relinquished. The obligation is relinquished to perform any of these when one surrenders to the Lord. Then, let me just read this one. Then 11.11.32. He says, this is part of a long group of verses which are translated, but it means here that such a saintly person understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me, this is Krishna speaking to Uddhava, such a saintly person understands that the ordinary religious duties prescribed by me in various Vedic scriptures possess favorable qualities that purify the performer. And he knows that neglect of such duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Because Krishna himself said, yagya dana tapa karma natyajam karyam evitat. Right? That you should not give these up, but you should do them. So he says also here that they're good, they purify. Bhavanani manishinam. And he knows that neglect of these duties constitutes a discrepancy in one's life. Having taken shelter at my lotus feet, however, a saintly person ultimately renounces such ordinary religious duties and worships me alone. He is thus considered to be the best among all living entities. These are all from Uddhava Gita, actually, all these quotations. Here is 11.29, which you might be familiar with, and I referred to this yesterday. Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shavarnadova shraddha yavana jayate. As long as one is not satiated by fruit of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of Vedic injunctions. So it's clear that when one has awakened his taste, then he doesn't have to take note of the Vedic or follow these other conventional Vedic injunctions. Right? When this taste for hearing Krishna Katha is strong, then at that time a person can renounce Nitya Karma and Varnashram Dharma and everything. And in the commentary, Jiva Goswami points out that when a person fully surrenders to Lord Krishna and he takes shelter of the Lord's promise to liquidate all other responsibilities and debts of the surrendered soul. Let me read that again. Jiva Goswami points out in this regard that when a person fully surrenders to Lord Krishna, he takes shelter of the Lord's promise to liquidate all other responsibilities and debts of the surrendered soul. The devotee thus becomes fearless by meditating on the Lord's promise of protection. Those, however, who are materially attached are frightened by the prospect of full surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thereby revealing their inimical mentality toward the Lord. And the last verses 11, 29, 34. Martyo yada tyaktva samasta karma niveditatma vichikirshito me tadamritatvam pratipadyamano mayatma bhuyaya chakalpate vai. A person who gives up all fruitive activities and offers himself entirely unto me, eagerly desiring to render service unto me, achieves liberation from birth and death, and is promoted to the status of sharing my own opulence. That's in the Bhakti Yoga chapter of the Uddhava Gita. I think that's the last chapter. Yeah. So we can see in the Bhagavatam this idea of surrendering to Bhagavan relinquishes one from all other debts. And Krishna wipes away all of his sins, and he has no other obligations. So therefore, a person he doesn't have to worry. Therefore, the Lord says, Ma shuchaha, don't worry, I will protect you. Vishnu Chakravarti says, Ma shuchaha, don't grieve for yourself or for others, Arjuna. I am bound by my vow to carry the burden of freeing any person like you from all his sins and deliver him from samsara. If someone fixes his mind on me, giving up all his swadharma, and remains joyful in surrender to me, I am also bound to give him the means to achieve me. What more can I say? I am even ready to accept the burden of maintaining his material life, as I said before, ananyaschin dayantamam yejana paripasate nesham nitya vyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. And he also says, pari in parityaja means that the ultimate objective of this instruction is not karma palatyag. Rather, it means that you should take full shelter of me and not surrender to dharma, gyan, yoga, or any of the devas. Previously, I said, you do not have the adhikar for my ananya bhakti, and I told you to do karma misra bhakti, yad karoshi, yad ashnashi, yad Jahosi, the Dasi, yet. But now I'm giving you the adhikar to do ananya bhakti, Arjuna. Krishna's giving a special blessing to Arjuna at this point, because he's dear to Krishna. So Krishna's giving him some special blessing.
That's also here, 66. Yes.
Previously I told that you do not have the qualification for the most excellent unalloyed devotion to me, ananya bhakti. At that time I said, whatever you do, whatever you eat, and I told you that your qualification was karma misra bhakti, but now, by my special mercy, I have given you the qualification for unalloyed bhakti. I have violated my own rule that unalloyed devotion may be attained only when one receives the mercy of my pure devotee, just as I will violate my own promise while fighting with Bhishma. So Krishna broke his promise for Arjuna, as he will do later. So Purityaja doesn't just mean give up the fruits, but it means surrender completely to Krishna. My heart is overflowing with mercy, and out of compassion I've made you qualified for ananya bhakti. This can only be attained by the mercy of my pure devotees. So now I have broken this rule, and I am granting this to you myself. Don't think that you'll incur sin by not performing your nitya and naimittic duties. The Vedas also say to do that, but I was the one who spoke that in the Vedas, and now I'm asking you to renounce them. On the contrary, follow your nitya karma now, and out of disrespecting my order, that will be sinful. And Vishwanath Chakravarti describes that a person who surrenders to someone is like a purchased animal. And he acts like the animal. He doesn't complain. You ask them, and they do without complaint. Whatever you feed them, they eat. Wherever you bring them, they stay. This is the characteristic of surrender. So he says that these six steps of surrender have been mentioned in the Vedas. an anukul is acting for the pleasure of one's worshipable deity. He says, knowing the Lord alone will protect and maintain me. This is faith. To have faith, even in dangerous situations, like the Lord's devotees, Draupadi and Gajendra, that is the needed faith. Then the Lord will protect. So now give oneself to the Lord. This gross and subtle body will be used in the Lord's service. To be humble in front of the Lord. These are the signs of surrender to the Lord, Sharanagati. There's a verse in the third canto, chapter 23, text 56. I didn't look that up, but Neha yad karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirta parasevaya jivan apramitohisa. That means that all acts, all work is meant for becoming religious. All karma is meant for dharma. And all religious activities meant for renunciation. All dharma is meant for renunciation. And all renunciation is meant for coming to devotional service to the Lord. And if those things don't bring that, if a person doesn't get that result from each of those, then he is like a walking corpse. Jivan api mrito hisa. He's dead, although he is alive. So Arjuna is wondering then, if at present, if I surrender to you in this way, good or bad activities, as you engage me, I don't have to worry, you are the Lord. And if your desire is to engage me in irreligious activities, what will be my destination? So Krishna says, sinful activities in the past, present, and future, I will deliver you from all that, Arjuna. I have all power, and I am not incapable of doing it. I am making you the object of instruction to humanity by speaking to you. Mahashucha, don't worry about your destination. The entire universe can give up all their activities and engage happily in my devotional service. The responsibility for their sins and bringing them to me is mine, as is the responsibility to maintain their bodies, as I've said before. Hey, Hunter, and moreover, you shouldn't lament that, oh, the Lord has taken this responsibility and it is a burden for him. It's not a burden for me, who am Bhakta Vatsal. I am also Sattva Sankalpa. My desire is truth. So having given you this instruction, you are not in need of any further instruction now. So I will conclude this Shastra here. That's Vishwanath's commentary. Baladeva Vidyabhushan also comments on this verse. You want to hear that? None of this is in Gitamrita. You are asking me to surrender and perform pure devotion, but how can one do this without first purifying the heart through karma yoga, Krishna? The sins of the heart are removed by tapasya, vratas, etc. And after this, Krishna speaks this verse. All atonements, prescribed duties must be given up. No more atonements for sins in the past and in this life, Arjuna. And one should worship me, Krishna, who has various forms. That destroys all sins and its root, ignorance. There's no need to worship anyone else, including Lord Shiva. I am the Supreme Lord and Controller, and I'll release you from all past karma and sins once you take shelter of me. This is my duty. Don't fear and lament, Mahasucha. The meaning of Krishna saying, don't lament, is pious activity and atonement will take a long time. Just surrender and your heart will become purified and your defects will go away. There's no need for vratas or atonement. This is also mentioned in the Vedas. Quote, one tastes nectar not by karma or wealth, but by surrender. Unquote. One knows the Lord only by faith and devotion in his association by remembering him. For the sanishta devotees who have gross desires and parinishta devotees who may desire name and fame, one should set the example in doing one's duties. Others perform these duties to set good example to inhibit immature devotees from giving up activities prematurely. Thus Krishna says, Ma Shucha, don't lament. Don't think Krishna is telling Arjuna, lamenting that he'll give up his duties and will incur sin, and Krishna is telling him not to worry, that he'll get some sins. The Vedas tell austerities to find God for the less advanced. Following the order of God can never bring sin, so Arjuna should not worry. Not following is sinful. Krishna should give up, Arjuna should give up the fruit and the activity, not just the fruit. Because the person whose surrender is engaged in worshipping the Lord, there is no need for any prescribed duty. A sannishta devotee realizes himself and parinishta, the supersoul. When a devotee surrenders, he realizes the Lord and need not perform any of these activities. Until one becomes free from material desires and has a taste for Krishna's pastimes, he should do varnashram duties. He's quoting from the Bhagavatam. But when this takes place, he should give up all varnashram signs. And he quotes from the six kinds of surrender also. Anukulyasya, sankalpa, etc. It seems that he gives the Brahmanishta, Ishwaranishta, and Bhagavatnishta to the Sanishta, Parinishta, and Nirapeksha Bhaktas. He ascribes these levels in the same way. Now, what else? Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Are you ready for this? Are we going to get past this Charma Shloka? It's like a mountain. There's so much on this one verse. I have instructed you in the different dharmas, Arjuna. Varnashram dharma, yati dharma, vairagya, sense and mind control, dhyana yoga, and controlling the opulences of Ishwar, so that you can attain Brahma gyan and Ishwar gyan. This is just like Prabhupada's commentary, if you notice. It's just, if you look, it's exactly the same as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the first paragraph of Prabhupada's commentary. Now, in his conclusion, the Lord is telling Arjuna to completely give up all these dharmic processes and exclusively surrender to him. Now he's speaking as Krishna again. Only if you surrender in this way, Arjuna, will I deliver you from all sin. Whether they're caused by your material conditioning or by renouncing these dharmic processes, you should consider that you are not the performer of those acts, and you shouldn't grieve for anything. The true sarup of the jiva is easily awakened from its dormant state by the performance of nirgun bhakti to me. At that time, it's not required that one perform dharma, prescribed duties or atonements, etc., or to practice gyan, yoga, dhyana, or any other process. One should perform bodily, mental, or spiritual acts. One should perform bodily, mental, or spiritual activities, even in the bound state. But he should give up Brahma Nishtha, adherence to the impersonal feature, being attracted by the beauty and sweetness of Bhagavan in an exclusively surrendered mood. The meaning is that whatever karma an embodied jiva performs for his livelihood should be performed with these types of higher nishtha, Brahma nishtha, Ishwar nishtha, and Bhagavat nishtha. Lower nishtha refers to akarma and vikarma, which create anarthas. All processes such as varnashram dharma and vairagya assume their respective natures, bhavas, by adopting one of these types of nishtha. This is the point that I think I was trying to make to you yesterday, that I was just realizing from seeing this, which I hadn't realized before. All processes such as varnashram, vairagya, etc., assume their respective natures, bhava, by adopting one of these types of nishtha. Now here's the explanation. When action is performed in subordination to Brahma Nishtha, the bhava of karma and gyan manifests, whether it's varnashram or vairagya. When action is performed under Ishwara Nishtha, the bhava of karma offered to Ishwara, jnana yoga, etc., manifests. And when it is performed with Bhagavat Nishtha, it transforms into Shuddha or Keval Bhakti. Thus, this bhakti alone is the most confidential tattva, and prema is the supreme goal of life. This is the principal teaching and innermost intention of Bhagavad Gita. The lifestyles of karmis, gyanis, and bhaktas appear to be the same, but when we observe their respective types of nishtha, it is clear that there is a vast difference between their styles of worship in terms of their sadhana as well as their ultimate goal. So he uses these terms, and Baladeva Dibhushan uses the sa-nishtha, parinishtha, and nirapeksha level. So sometimes the terms can be used in different contexts and they have different connotations. So that means you have to kind of stretch things and see, because like Buddha Yoga, it has this different applications. So these terms also have some different applications. But, you know, I mean, it's like Bhaktivinoda said, this is the principal teaching and the innermost intention of the Bhagavad Gita to understand this point. Because there's many kinds of yajna, dana, tapa, vairagya, varnashram, and so forth. But they're done with the inner mood, Brahma Nishtha, Ishvara Nishtha, or Bhagavat Nishtha. Okay. So, someone might ask, what should be done with these jewels of knowledge? Distribute them or keep them secretly? So here Krishna now describes if we should distribute these jewels, then to whom? Who is qualified? Because he just gave the most confidential knowledge, the most valuable jewel. So now he's protecting it with this verse. Idam te narapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana na cha shu shushave vacham na cha mamyo vyasuyati. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes a kind of sequence of these four items. Natapaskaya, the person must have controlled senses. If he has uncontrolled senses, don't explain this to him. But even if the person has controlled the senses, if he's nabhaktaya, if he's not a devotee, if he has no faith in bhakti or in the Lord, then still you shouldn't give it to him. Nabhaktaya kadachana, at any time. And even if he's a devotee, if he's not inclined to submissive hearing or serving, then still we shouldn't give it. And even if he is hearing, but if he's envious, abhyasuyati, then this message of the Gita must never be given to such a person at any cost, says Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura. If a person's envious, it means that they say Krishna has a material form which is temporary and illusory. So what kind of devotee is that, one might ask, and that's a good question. It's not real, or not a real devotee. So someone may show that he's kind of devotee, but if he's envious of Krishna, if he doesn't have faith in Krishna's form, then he's not actually a devotee. Now Prabhupada kind of echoes this idea in the middle of his commentary. Actually, the purpose of the Gita is not understandable to those who are sensuous. Even if one is not sensuous, but is strictly following the disciplines and joining the Vedas, if he is not a devotee, he also cannot understand Krishna. And even when one poses himself as a devotee of Krishna, but is not engaged in Krishna activities, he also cannot understand Krishna. There are many persons who envy Krishna because he has explained in the Gita that he is the supreme and nothing is above him. There are many persons who are envious of Krishna. Such persons should not be told of Bhagavad Gita, for they cannot understand. There is no possibility of faithless persons understanding the Gita and Krishna. Okay, next verse.
Ya idam paramam guyam mad bhakteshva bhidhasyati atim pai param kritva mama vaishati asangshayaha.
For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. So we see there's two things being mentioned. So one who's explaining this Gita Shastra to others, first thing is pure devotional service is guaranteed. So first they attain my parabhakti, because Krishna says, bhakti mai param kritva. And the second result, mamma vaishati asangshaya. Then later they attain me. So first they attain my parabhakti, and then later they attain me. And Prabhupada reiterates in the middle of the commentary, Bhagavad Gita should be explained to persons who are ready to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I have some notes here. We'll read something from the Bhagavatam, 332-41. I guess this should have been for the previous verse, but need a magnifying glass. Lord Kapila continued, this instruction is not meant for the envious, for the agnostics, or for persons who are unclean in their behavior, nor is it for hypocrites or for persons who are proud of material possessions. It is not to be instructed to persons who are too greedy and too attached to family life, nor to persons who are non-devotees and who are envious of the devotees and the personality of Godhead. Listen to this commentary, if I can read it. Persons who are always planning to do harm to other living entities are not eligible to understand Krishna consciousness and cannot enter into the realm of transcendental loving service to the Lord. Also, there are so-called disciples who become submissive to a spiritual master most artificially with an ulterior motive. They also cannot understand what Krishna consciousness or devotional service is. Persons who, due to being initiated by another sect of religious faith, do not find devotional service as a common platform for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead also cannot understand Krishna consciousness. We have experienced that some students come to join us, but because of being biased in some particular type of faith, they leave our camp and become lost in the wilderness. Actually, Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian religious faith. It is a teaching process for understanding the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him. Anyone can join this movement without prejudice, but unfortunately there are some persons who feel differently. It is better, therefore, not to instruct the science of Krishna consciousness to such persons. Generally, materialistic persons are after some name, fame, and material gain. So, if someone takes to Krishna consciousness for these reasons, he will never be able to understand this philosophy. Such persons take to religious principles as a social decoration. They admit themselves into some cultural institution for the sake of name only, especially in this age. Such persons also cannot understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Even if one is greedy for material possessions, even if one is not greedy for material possessions, but is too attached to family life, he also cannot understand Krishna consciousness. Superficially, such persons are not very greedy for material possessions, but they are too attached to wife, children, and family improvement. When a person is not contaminated by the above mentioned faults, yet at the ultimate issue, is not interested in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or if he is a non-devotee, he also cannot understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada gives some of the finer points of this idea. This is 3:32-41, and the next verse is 42. Sharadhanaya bhaktaya vinitainaya shaushuve bhuteshu krittamaitraya shushrubirataya cha. Instruction should be given to the faithful devotee who is respectful to the spiritual master, non-envious, friendly to all kinds of living entities, and eager to render service with faith and sincerity. Okay, so anyway, you can see that topic is there. And it's also mentioned in the Bhagavatam, 11:29-31. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. You should not share this instruction. Oh, I might as well read this. My dear friend Uddhava, have you now completely understood this transcendental knowledge? Are the confusion and lamentation that arose in your mind now dispelled? It's very similar. You should not share this instruction with anyone who is hypocritical, atheistic, or dishonest, or with anyone who will not listen faithfully, who is not a devotee, or who is simply not humble. Some of the same words are used. Nayatatvaya dambikaya nastikaya shataya cha. Ashu shu shura bhaktaya durvinitaya diyatam. This knowledge should be taught, however, to one who is free from these bad qualities, who is dedicated to the welfare of the brahmanas, and who is kindly disposed, saintly, and pure. And if common workers and women are found to have devotion for the Supreme Lord, they are also to be accepted as qualified hearers. Shudra yoshitam cha. That's 11:29-30-31-69. Na cha tasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakritamaha bhavita na chadme tasmad anya priyataro bhavi. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. The one who explains this Gita Shastra to the devotees. So now Krishna explains the results of studying the Gita. The word adhyeshate means studying. Adhyeshate chaya imam dharmyam sambaram avayohu jnana yagyena tenaham ishtasyam iti me mitihi. And I declare that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. So it seems that the word jnana yagya is not necessarily a term for Brahmavadis, but it can be applied for different persons. So again, we have to, Radhisham, we have to look at the context. The word Jnana Yagya is being used in this verse, talking about the most dear devotee, or those who studied Bhagavad Gita, text 71. Shaddha banana suyascha shrinu yarapi yo naraha sopi mukta shubha lokan prapnu yat punya karmaram. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. So they may not become devotees, but if they just hear, Prabhupada describes in his commentary, you know, with some faith that Krishna is God, or he could be God, like this, if they're not envious, then that you can preach to them. He describes them. In the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, the Gita is for devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord will hold open class, and in that class, not all the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It is explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions, and after that, attain to the higher planetary system where all righteous persons are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains the result of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and to become a devotee of the Lord. Now, Prabhupada describes that here, the word punyalokan means those who are righteous in performing devotional service but who are not pure can attain the planetary system of the pole star or Dhruvaloka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. He is a great devotee and has a special planet called the pole star. So this loka is Shubha Loka is referring to Dhruvaloka, and Baladeva Nibhushan mentions Vaikuntha, or also the planet where the devotee, where people go after performing many Ashwamedha yagyas. So you can see it's being applied that the person is elevated, and it depends on his nishta, right? If he has karma nishta, then he goes to the Ashwamedha planet, wherever that is, maybe Indraloka, Chandraloka. And if he's not taking up pure devotional service, then he may go to Dhruvaloka, if he's just hearing without envy. And someone who's higher, he may go to Vaikuntha, according to Baladeva Nibhushan. 72. O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? Prabhupada writes, the Lord was ready to re-explain any point or the whole Bhagavad Gita if so required. So this was mentioned by Vishwanath and Baladev. And Vishwanath said that this was the Lord's only intention in speaking this shloka. That means he was ready to speak the whole Gita right from the beginning, all over again. And that's why he spoke this verse. Verse 73. So now Arjuna responds after all of this nectar has been poured on him. Yeah, that's good. You can turn that one too. You can turn that light on also. So now Arjuna speaks verse 73. He speaks this to present the actual condition of his heart to Krishna. Arjuna uvacha nashtamoha smritir labdha tat prasadam mayachuta stitosmi kata sandeha karishye vachanam tava. Arjuna said, my dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, Arjuna replies, what more can I ask? Abandoning all dharmas, I approach you for shelter. I am now free from anxiety, and I have full trust in you. Henceforth, having taken full shelter of you, I will accept your order as my dharma. You are the suitable bestower of shelter. I will no longer follow the dharma of my ashram or the process of jnana yoga and so on. From now on, I will have nothing to do with any of those. Then Krishna says, my dear friend Arjuna, there remains a little work left in the matter of my relieving the earth of her burden, and I want to do this through you. Thus addressed by the Lord, Arjuna took up his Gandiva bow and stood to fight. Haribo. Here's another version of the same thing. What further questions should I ask, Krishna? I've become free from all anxiety. Because I've given up all types of dharma and I've surrendered unto you, now I have complete faith in you. From now on, you're my sole refuge. I've completely surrendered my dharma unto you, and I will remain fixed in your order. I will not follow Varnashram Dharma, Jnana Yoga, or any other process from today. I have abandoned them all. Krishna says, my dear friend Arjuna, I still have more to do in order to remove the burden of this earth, and I will accomplish this through you. Arjuna then prepared to fight. And Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes, this is what I used in Gitamata. My illusion is gone. I understand things as they are now, Krishna. My doubts are dispelled. My mind is clear, and I will do whatever you ask. Demigods and humans are free to act, following or not, following their duties. Demigods bless those in the bodily concept of life. Previously I was confused, but that has been removed by hearing your instructions. I now understand that there is the Supreme Lord with a transcendental and beautiful form full of knowledge and bliss. He is the Supreme Controller, the friend of His devotees, and by His will He creates the material world. He is so merciful that He can give His devotees anything, even His own self. This is the knowledge that I've gained, and I am a soul surrendered to you because I've understood you as that Supreme Person. I am a soul surrendered to you now, and I'm ready to assist you in the mission of removing the burden of the world. Saying this, Arjuna took hold of his bow Gandiva and stood up, ready to fight. So similar, Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentary. Prabhupada writes, Arjuna represents the jiva here. And since he's playing the role of the Nityabhada jiva, that who's misused his minute independence, now that he's taken up the service of Krishna again, now he's agreed to surrender fully to Krishna without any other considerations, it's like he represents the minute independence of Krishna. And Prabhupada says this here somewhere, maybe in this commentary or in another commentary soon. But he mentions this point a few times. I'm going to skip through the kind of dance through the commentary. The first sentence. The constitutional position of a living entity represented by Arjuna is that he has to act according to the order of the Supreme Lord. Then in the middle of this paragraph, the living entity's constitutional position is to be a servitor. He has to serve either the illusory Maya or the Supreme Lord. Then down a few sentences. When a person is liberated, his illusion is over, and he voluntarily surrenders unto the Supreme to act according to his desires. Next paragraph. The word moha is important in this verse. Moha refers to that which is opposed to knowledge. The living entity thinks that he is not a servant, but a master of this material world. He wants to lord it over the material nature. That is his illusion. This illusion can be overcome by the mercy of the Lord or by the mercy of a pure devotee. When that illusion is over, one agrees to act in Krishna consciousness. Last two sentences in the purport. When Arjuna understood that it was Krishna's plan to reduce the unnecessary increase of population, which means the demons, doesn't mean that there's a population explosion or something. He agreed to fight according to Krishna's desire. He again took up his weapon, his arrows and bow, to fight on the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I like to see it in a poetic, given some poetic license, then I would say that Gandiva bow represents the jiva's minute independence. And Arjuna is now, because in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, we see he put the bow down. Visrija sa sharam chapam. Right? He give his chapam, put it down. Visrija. And now he's picking it up again. So it's a very significant point. Very significant. So this is when the jiva he raises his minute independence now to again serve the Lord with full conviction and faith. So, and this is the last commentary given by Vishwanath Chakravarti. He says that I wrote comments for the last five verses, but Lord Ganesh sent a rat who stole the two pages the commentary was written on. So if that is his desire, then kya kare? Then let him have those pages, and I offer my obeisances to Ganesh Ji, and I wish that he may be pleased with me. Yeah. So this is 73 is his last tika in the Gita. But if someone is going to worship Ganesh, then they should pray to Ganesh to return those two pages so all of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas can see what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote in the last five verses of the Bhagavad Gita. So if any of you get darshan of Ganeshji, please see if you can get these two pages back, which was stolen by his representative, some mouse or some rat. So now Sanjaya speaks, and this is the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Now we flash back to Hastinapur. Now we're not on the battlefield any longer. And the blind king is sitting in his chair. And Sanjaya is speaking to him. Sanjaya vacha ityaham vasudevasya partasya cha mahatmanah samvadam imam aushrausham adhutam ramaharshanam. Sanjaya said, thus I have heard the conversation of two great souls, mahatmas, Krishna and Arjuna, Vasudev and Partha. And so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. So the word iti again comes here. Before it was the end of the Gita Shastra, now it's the end of the Gita itself. In the beginning of the Gita, Dhritarashtra inquired from his secretary Sanjaya, what happened on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? And the entire study was related to the heart of Sanjaya by the grace of his Guru Vyas. He thus explained the theme of the battlefield. The conversation was wonderful because such an important conversation between two great souls had never taken place before and would never take place again. It was wonderful because the Supreme Personality of Godhead was speaking about himself and his energies to the living entity Arjuna, a great devotee. If we follow in the footsteps of Arjuna to understand Krishna, then our life will be happy and successful. Sanjaya realized this, and as he began to understand it, he related the conversation to Dhritarashtra. Vyasa prasada chutavan etad guyam aham param yogam yogeshwarad krishnad sakshat katayata swayam. By the mercy of Vyas, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who is speaking personally to Arjuna. Vyas was the spiritual master of Sanjaya, and Sanjaya admits that it was by Vyasa's mercy that he could understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that one has to understand Krishna, not directly, but through the medium of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the transparent medium, although it is true that the experience is still direct. This is the mystery of disciplic succession. So you're going through the guru, but at the same time, you're getting a direct experience. So it's simultaneously direct and indirect. Vyasa prasada shrutavan. So I've heard this by the mercy of Vyas. So we've also heard this by the mercy of Vyas also. Right? If he didn't, he hadn't written the Gita, we wouldn't know. But here he's saying shakshat katayatasvam, hearing directly. But we also, and Prabhupada explains that hearing from the guru is just as good as hearing it directly from Krishna. And he says, when the spiritual master is bona fide, then one can hear the Bhagavad Gita directly as Arjuna heard it. And he says in the second paragraph, Narada is the direct disciple of Krishna and the spiritual master of Vyas. Therefore, Vyas is as bona fide as Arjuna because he comes in the disciplic succession, and Sanjaya is the direct disciple of Vyas. Therefore, by the grace of Vyas, Sanjaya's senses were purified and he could see and hear Krishna directly. One who directly hears Krishna can understand this confidential knowledge. If one does not come to the disciplic succession, he cannot hear Krishna. Therefore, his knowledge is always imperfect, at least as far as understanding Gita is concerned. 76. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya samvadam imam adbhutam keshavarjunayo punyam rishyami cha muhur muhu. O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure being thrilled at every moment. Prabhupada writes at the end, the result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Rishyamicha muhur muhur. Anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipradam purnamrita svadhanam tatcha sangsmritya sangsmritya rupam adyadbhutam harehe vismayo me mahan rajan prishyami cha puna punaha. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. So you see the words abhuta and vismaya. So these indicate the shantaras which Sanjaya is absorbed in. His ishtadeva is the virat or the visvarup. So therefore he's referring to that wonderful, most dear form of Krishna, to him at least, the visvarup. Prabhupada writes, it appears that Sanjaya also, by the grace of Vyas, could see the universal form Krishna exhibited to Arjuna. It was exhibited to Arjuna only, yet some great devotees could also see the universal form Krishna when it was showed to Arjuna, and Vyas was one of them. Vyas disclosed this to his disciple Sanjaya, who remembered that wonderful form of Krishna exhibited to Arjuna and enjoyed it repeatedly. Yatra yogeshwara krishno yatra pata danodaraha tatra shri vijayo bhutir dhruva nitir matir mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. So this is the final answer to the first verse of Dhritarashtra's question, that kim akurvanta sanjaya, what's happening there on the battlefield? So now the answer is, I'm very sorry, my dear king, but your sons have no chance of winning the battle. Because on Yudhisthira's army, there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, with the Gandiva bow, which can never be defeated. And driving that chariot is the supreme lord, Vasudev, the son of Devaki. And wherever they are, there will certainly be victory, morality, great opulence and power. So Prabhupada also writes, the Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side, but after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, you are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune. He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Prabhupada writes in the third paragraph, some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral. But the reality of the situation is clearly stated. Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. The supreme instruction of morality is stated in the 9th chapter, in the 34th verse, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta. One must become a devotee of Krishna, and the essence of all religion is to surrender unto Krishna. Sarvadharmam Purityajam Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. The instructions of Bhagavad Gita constitute the supreme process of religion and morality. All other processes may be purifying and may lead to this process, but the last instruction of the Gita is the last word in all morality and religion. Surrender unto Krishna. This is the verdict of the 18th chapter. Fourth paragraph. From Bhagavad Gita we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and by meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The path of regulative principles, according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion, may be a confidential path of knowledge. That's Brahmanishta. But although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential. Ishwaranishta. And surrender unto Krishna in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. That is the essence of the 18th chapter. That's Bhagavad Nishtha. Prabhupada writes, the living entity in his original position is pure spirit. This is the last paragraph. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun and the living entities to sunshine. Because the living entities are the marginal energy of Krishna, they have a tendency to be in contact either with the material or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between these two energies of the Lord, and because he belongs to the superior energy, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, he comes under direct order of Krishna. Thus he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency, Ladini Shakti. So again, he's talking about the minute independence, the proper use of his minute independence, and it's in the last paragraph of the book. So Arjuna, taking up his Gandiva bow and deciding to fight, represents the living entity, using properly his minute independence and full surrender to Krishna. He reassumes his original position. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is meant for everyone, because everyone is like Arjuna fighting a battle, on the battlefield of life. And there's so many different problems and so many conflicts. And there's a lot of confusion in everyone's life. So if they get these clear instructions, then they can become confident and their illusions will be dispelled, just as Arjuna's illusions were dispelled. Nashta moha smritir labdha tvat prasad mayachita. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes, having obtained the boat of the Lord's desire, I have submerged myself in the sea of Bhagavad Gita, where I have collected many wonderful gems of its purports. Due to my great feelings of joy, I cannot raise myself out of the sea. I only hope that the cunning son of Nanda is pleased with me. I, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, have with great effort compiled this tika named Sri Gita Bhushan. May the saintly devotees correct any faults it contains. They are always eager to taste the sweetness of pure love for Sri Govinda, and their hearts are always melted with compassion. And Baladeva also wrote, those who think Bhagavad Gita was spoken to engage Arjuna in battle are incorrect. The confidential message is to become a devotee. All yogas are only means to purify the heart so that one may come to devotion. The summary is, of the many ways to purify the heart, the best and quickest is to surrender to Krishna. Okay, so we'll stop now. Any last questions? Arjuna agrees to fight, and victory is assured by Sanjay. 67 to 78. Yeah, there's smarnam in the nine processes. Yeah. But the gopis, their main seva is them. The most outstanding, prominent feature, that their attachment is so strong that they can't stop thinking of Krishna. It kind of like drives them crazy. Even when he goes away, their intensity increases even more. So much that they feel like his presence even when he's gone in separation. So their thinking, their meditation is so deep, their thinking is so intense that there's no other devotees that can be compared to them. And actually Krishna mentions this to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, but I didn't, I'd have to look for him. He almost used the same words, Mad Manaskaya, something like that, I forget. It's in the Uddhava Gita. He did. Well, people who chant the verses can do it in about an hour. So it's possible that the conversation took maybe an hour and a half, something like that. Some people say 45 minutes, and it's hard to say exactly, because, I mean, Krishna is, you know, he can stretch the time or shrink it as he likes. I tend to think that he shrank the time, because I can't imagine that all of those passionate kshatriyas just patiently waited for him to have this, you know, philosophical discourse in the middle between the two armies. I think for them, it must have been shorter. And then Krishna just kind of, within that, whatever, 10 minutes or 15 minutes, he kind of stretched it and made it like this whole conversation. But that's just my intuition about it. I haven't, you know, there's no comments by any acharyas about this particular detail. The action?
Reactions.
I don't remember. I don't recall reading any such reaction. And I don't have a full account of Mahabharata right now. I mean, I have in some place, but I haven't seen that. When they what? Who? The people of this world? Well, that characteristic was ascribed to demons who are heavily influenced by Rajas and Tamas. That's their main thing, as they, Prabhupada mentioned four times in one commentary, that the suras, they follow Shastra, and the asuras don't. This is the main, you know, crux or criteria for judging. But I mean, there's people that are in passion that follow Shastra. Doesn't mean that, I mean, Kshatriyas, they usually follow Shastra. Because in motive passion, there's many different kinds of people. I mean, you could be ignorant and still follow Shastra. But there's a tendency to not follow in motive ignorance. But if somebody is a Shudra, he could be, like we read, the Shudras from the Bhagavatam, right? They're clean, honest, they're loyal, humble to their master, and all of these things. So we can't ascribe one behavior to the one mode of nature. There's quite a variety, whole gamut of persons and different nishtas. Difference between the two. That's the general idea. I haven't seen anyone else say about the purpose. Yeah, it says I want to know the truth. Yag and of sannyas. Or Rishikesh. Yeah, it's just a way of translating. In the commentary, it says Arjuna wants to clarify the two distinct subject matters of the Gita, tyag and sannyas. Thus, he's asking the meaning of these two words. I guess the word purpose could have been, you know, truth or meaning. Could have translated in different ways. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't see any other comment about that. We'll stop now. Give you some time for studying. You have Pundarik, you have a question? Well, from Sanjaya's point of view. Yeah. Yeah, but even if he is, he doesn't realize it. I mean, it's the one and only time it happened during their lifetime, and on the Earth planet, as far as we know. I mean, in the next day of Brahma, it's going to happen again, and in the last day of Brahma, it happened before. But for us, it's too far time span to say that yes, this happened, you know, so many trillions of years ago. Same conversation took place. And, you know, probably Sanjaya didn't understand that also. But he was realizing the importance of the conversation. That's the idea. I mean, it seems that, like, okay, he was just doing it as a service for Dhritarashtra, who was his boss. And he was the servant, you know, the secretary. He was considered like a second Vidura. He was very wise, and he was very much appreciated by Dhritarashtra. And he also drove he drove, you know, the chariot for Dhritarashtra, which wasn't, you know, didn't happen much, but he was more like his secretary. So he did that as a service, and when he was presenting it, you know, he got this vision from Vyas, and so he was seeing everything in his mind's eye and reporting it. But as he was doing that, he was realizing, you know, the importance and the glory of such conversation, that he was seeing it directly. So that at the end of it, he felt so, oh, I'm so fortunate that I heard this directly from Krishna. And I saw it directly. Well, because the Gita points towards Bhagavad Bhakti throughout, even from the first, you know, like the second chapter. And we've also heard, like, in the beginning I told the story of Susharma. Right? He became a bull and then got saved by the pious acts of one prostitute. So, you know, this prostitute had heard from this parrot, you know, the first chapter of the Gita. And it said that if someone chants one verse or even half a verse or even one pada, then he'll get the same result as Susharma got. That Narayan was telling to Lakshmi at this point. So it's potent, the whole Bhagavad Gita, every inch of it. But it seems that this it's telling about this confidential secret. So it would indicate that, you know, Purushottam Yoga or Bhagavad Bhakti, surrender to Krishna, that instruction. Because Krishna's God, and therefore he's the personification of all morality and of all Vedic injunctions. Vedaischa sarvam ahameva vedyo. So if someone surrenders to him, then all of the kinds of religions are automatically included. So if someone is preaching like that, that's the highest thing. Generally, when you give some class, even you may speak on some other point, gradually you come to the point describing that devotional service is the ultimate thing, right, of the Gita. So, to me it seems that this message, that this supreme secret is this point. Okay? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Krishna Arjuna ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Pada ki. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan ki. Nitya Gaura Premanandi.